Cool. So we're going to read from a book called Ecclesiastes, starting in chapter 1, verse 1. So it will be up on the screen, as you can see. The words of the teacher, son of David, king in Jerusalem. Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. What do people gain from all their labours at which they toil under the sun? Generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun sets and hurries back to where it rises. The wind blows to the south and turns to the north, round and round it goes, ever returning on its course. All streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. To the place the streams come from, there they return. All things are wearisome, more than one can say. The eye never has enough of seeing, nor the ear its fill of hearing. What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one can say, look, this is something new? It was here already long ago. It was here before our time. No one remembers the former generations, and even those yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow them.
In that little word cloud, I was the one who wrote grammar. This would come as some great surprise to my Year 6 teacher, Mrs. Ryan, let me assure you, but in the last 20 years, I have completely fallen in love with grammar. Yes, I have read Death Sentence by Don Watson. Yes, I can tell you the difference between the subjunctive and the imperative mood. And yes, the last physical book I read was called Grammar for a Full Life. And I tell you, I feel like my life is just that little bit fuller ever since I read it. And yes, I can tell you everything that is wrong with this sentence. Over there, they're playing cricket with their cricket set, but there's a good chance the ball is not theirs because there's a man and his mates over there and they're looking angry. Now, to tell you the truth, I can't look at the screen because I will get angry at the at least 8 grammatical mistakes that are up there. But now let me be super honest with you. I've actually thrown books in the bin because of bad grammar and bad spelling. When it comes to grammar, perfection, or at least some semblance of accuracy, matters to me. It's something I strive towards. It's something I pursue in myself, and I am glad for opportunities to teach others the beauty of grammar. So I'll be outside under the tent near the jumping castle afterwards, and I'll probably be alone, but it's fine, I'll be okay. Now, before you get up and walk out thinking this is just too weird to be surrounded by a grammar nerd or perhaps a grammar narc, or perhaps you start texting in ideas for a psychologist, I want to give you a moment to pause. Just give a moment's thought to the things that really matter to you. We all have things that matter to us. We all have things about which we care. Things in which we're seeking better or best or even perfection. Perhaps it is that local Strava segment. Perhaps it is some aspect of your work or education you're undertaking. Perhaps it is your parenting, your house, the style of your other house. Perhaps it is your everything. But for people in this part of Sydney, in this moment in history, the way we are taught to think is that we can be the best. We can do the best. We can experience the best. And we can have the best. Life has limitless potential, and it is never right to think near enough is good enough. Our schools and universities, The books we read, the coaches and podcasts we listen to, all encourage an endless striving for best, for perfection, for remaining in the belief that you've not done enough until you've actually arrived at that point of satisfaction and perfection. And I did notice there were some people who wrote on there, nothing, I'm pursuing perfection in nothing. And if that does describe you, then no doubt you felt the criticism of our age. The questions people ask you like, didn't you network enough at uni? Like, didn't you spend enough hours at work? Didn't you get your folate and vitamins during pregnancy? Haven't you done that parenting course? Didn't you diet enough to fit into that? So we live in this world that is either striving towards perfection or making us guilty for not doing that enough. Because allegedly life has limitless potential and all that is holding you back is you. And now even Mary Poppins is pushing this agenda. In the song, Anything Can Happen, I'm not going to sing, by the way, just because that would be bad. But it goes like this. It says, if you reach for the stars, all you get are the stars. But we found a whole new spin. If you reach for the heavens, you get the stars thrown in. Anything can happen if you let it. Life is out there waiting, so go and get it. Grab it by the collar, seize it by the scruff. Once you've started living life, you just can't get enough. And those last few words summarize our predicament, and it is that the air we breathe holds up this striving for success and perfectionism as a sign of worth. And once you start walking down that path, you just can't stop because your own personal significance, your own personal value is said to be entirely hinged on doing enough. So in the quiet moments, many people will say to themselves, once I reach this summit, then people will see I'm not flawed and I will finally be worth something. Now, where is all this actually leading us? Well, in theory, it should be to a more content and joyous life, right? The more we achieve the things we're seeking to achieve, the more joyous and content we ought to be. But Professor Thomas Curran, a social psychologist from the London School of Economics and Political Science, has researched all this, this whole movement in the Western world and among people like us. And he says it's actually leading us in the opposite direction. In a 2019 TED Talk, he says, we know from clinician case reports that perfectionism conceals a whole host of psychological difficulties, including things like depression, anxiety, anorexia, bulimia, even suicide ideation. Those of us with perfectionist tendencies were more motivated and engaged at work, but their behaviour and thinking had strong links to higher levels of burnout, stress, and workaholism. Some researchers even found that having strong perfectionist tendencies could even reduce your lifespan. So Dr. Curran's main concern with perfectionists is that enough is never enough. And so can we get out of this wearisome pursuit of enough? Well, it may come as a surprise to you, but the Bible has something to say about all this. As a book, I think the Bible itself actually is often completely underrated. But it contains wisdom. Wisdom that our culture needs. Wisdom I need every day. And perhaps you might benefit from the wisdom contained within it as well. With regard to these issues, the Bible has two things to say that might temper and help reorient both our perfectionist striving and the fear that we've not done enough. And these realities are taught all the way through the Bible, but we see them in that short section that R.D. read for us just a moment ago. And the first one is this. It is that all this striving is actually against an untamable force. All this striving is actually against an untamable force. So from that passage again, from verse 5, we read, the sun rises and the sun sets and hurries back to where it rises. The wind blows to the south and turns to the north. Round and round it goes, ever returning on its course. All streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. To the place the streams come from, there they return again. And what's being established here is that the physical world is characterized by an endlessly repetitive cycle of movement and change, and yet no goal, no end is actually ever being reached. No ultimate status is being sought, no perfection is being targeted, but rather there's just a repetitive, hurrying, in ordered, structured cycles. And they're powerful cycles and endless cycles, and they cannot be changed. And this, therefore, logically excludes the possibility of anything being controlled, of anything being perfected. Against the untamable forces of the world around us, our efforts become meaningless and pointless. And no matter what level of effort you use to try and seek control, your efforts will ultimately be in vain because of the very structure and fabric of the world itself. It has a strength and an independence that cannot be tamed. And yet you might say, well, that's too big picture. That's talking about all the big things in the world. It's too big picture. There's much I can keep in control, and there's much I have the power to perfect, and it's valuable to seek worth and success and meaning in all of these efforts. And yet herein lies the helpfulness of a second piece of wisdom from this little passage. The second reality is that our striving is with a finite, limited body. Oh, there may be some things you can seek to control, but you yourself will be the ultimate limiting factor in your pursuit of enough. From verse 3 and 4, what do people gain from all their labours at which they toil under the sun? Generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. We labour and toil, we strive and we push, we sacrifice, we reach for better and best and perfection. We do it for those we love, and we do it and we feel good. We do it to know worthiness. We do it for the praise of others, and then we die. And what have you really gained at that point? Is that it? You just bust your gut for 90 years and then you just... Sure, you may have had some good moments. You may be a blessing to some. But gee, that takes some full-on effort, doesn't it? And he goes on in this little passage, all things are wearisome, more than one can say. And if there's part of this whole little section that resonates with me, that is it. It certainly resonates with me. I wonder if that resonates with you. There are so many things I'm meant to be doing that sometimes just looking at my calendar is overwhelming. I can't do them all, and even during the COVID lockdowns when I wasn't allowed to do anything, I still felt weary and sometimes overwhelmed. And I wonder if that was your experience as well. And yet onwards we go, striving hard in weary bodies, pursuing things even though we can never have enough. And he says ongoing, the eye never has enough of seeing, nor the ear its fill of hearing. What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There's nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one can say, look, there's something new. It was here already long ago. It was here before our time. And so all this effort and striving is only causing frustration and disappointment and fatigue and stress as we continue to strive for what is unachievable. It is why at the beginning of the passage he describes all of this as meaningless, or fleeting or temporary, because the world is untamable and you are limited and you are finite and so am I. And despite our ongoing best efforts, our trying to achieve perfection, it's like trying to stop the sun from shining. And in the end, we'll all be gone and forgotten. And so the habits of our lives are built around what is best. And we want the best. We want perfection. But what we see here and in our experience is that the striving is never satisfied. We're just not strong enough. We just don't live long enough to ever be or get enough or do enough to say enough. And so I end up thinking to myself, when is enough enough? Or better, can I stop the world and just get off? Is there a better way? Another way? Well, let me share a little secret with you. I always thought I would represent Australia at something. I never have. And now I strongly doubt I ever will, unless it is for best receding hairline or best dad joke. I think they're the only two categories in which I could win, but I look around here and there is tough competition. So I doubt I'm even going to get there. But this hope is part of why I love competitive sport. And on the 8th of August 2021, when Nicola McDermott won Olympic silver in the high jump with 2 metres, 2 centimetres and an Australian record, I became an instant fan. To be an Olympian, you must strive at perfection. What you eat, what you drink, what you breathe, who you see, how much you sleep, how you spend your time and more is all monitored and controlled. So in Nicola's case, you can be a lean, mean, jumping machine. And she finished the 2021 season with 14 competitions, 8 gold medals, Olympic silver, 3 Australian records, an ongoing record of 23 consecutive top 3 finishes across the world. And as the Commonwealth Games approached last month, I was pumped. Now married, competing as Nicola Olislagers, she was destined for Commonwealth perfection. And then up popped this Facebook post. Unfortunately, I won't be competing in the finals tomorrow. What was thought to be a tight calf after my qualifying round turned out to be a torn muscle in my jumping leg. Of all the emotions and shock I could feel in the moment, I still have peace. It might be a torn muscle, but I have a full heart that even in times that make no sense, I'll be covered and back jumping soon. I read this Facebook post and I thought to myself, how can she be holding it together when the whole world is tumbling down around her? How can she be holding it together and be at peace, she says, when her dreams are dashed and the expectations of 26 million Australians, or at least one young bloke, are on her shoulders? How can she be at peace? Well, this is what she says. I want you to see in everything the thread that holds my life together is Jesus. And he is what makes the difference. It's what the world needs. I'm beyond content amongst incredible victories and the toughest patches of my life. The thread is holding up. And as I now enter into new seasons of athletics and life, I thank Jesus for the strength and passion he provides every day. Without it, I would be lost and worried about the future. But perfect love casts out fear, and peace is found in a person, not in a formula. Now, there are plenty of places you can go to find formulas for peace amidst the striving, rest amidst the hurry, hope in the middle of a culture of perfection. There are 4-fold paths, 5 pillars, and a million BuzzFeed articles with 7, 10, or 11 ways that you can find peace. But just following those formulas are wearisome, more than one can say. And I think it actually is slightly ironic that in most cases, the formula approach just redirects you from one form of striving to a different form of striving, but still leaves you lost and without hope. But by contrast, there's a person. There's a person you can go to. And he does not tell you to go and do. This person, he invites you to come and to rest. And his name is Jesus. And to our striving hearts that can never get enough, he says, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. And this great invitation flows from Jesus' grief over watching people trying to ascend a mighty religious summit, carrying unbearable expectations on their shoulders. He's watching them striving for their goals, trying to achieve and prove themselves worthy. And he is watching them grow weary and burdened, and his compassion overwhelms him. So out flows these words. But these words are not just about that moment in time. Jesus has always known the burdens that we place upon ourselves. He has seen our wrestle for meaning. He sees our seeking for more in the things we do and in who we think we can be. He has seen how weary we become, and his compassionate heart is turned towards you. So he does not demand that we reach out and up to him, rather than call us up to another summit. Jesus came down to our level. He came down from heaven to earth, and he came down to show us himself and give himself to us. He came to walk with us and to show us another way, a better way, his way. And when he came down, he proved that he was not just another in a long line of religious prophets. No, when Jesus came down and was faced with the untamable forces of the world that hold us back, Jesus tamed those untamable forces. He calmed storms, he healed sickness, he raised the dead. But most importantly, he deeply understood people. He had deep compassion for people. The good and the bad, the humble and the arrogant, the insider and the outsider, the despairing and the broken. Jesus showed time and time again that his heart was for real people like me and real people like you. And when Jesus came down, he showed that neither this heart nor his body were limited by time and space. So when he says, "Come to me," he had time for people then, and he still has time for you now. When he said he could offer rest for weary souls, he had time for people then, and he still has time for you and for me now. He does not live in a body like ours that wearies, but rather he knows our weariness intimately. And he understands our burdens and griefs and failings, yet he still wants to walk with you in the midst of that. You see, Jesus offers himself to you. He says, "Come to me. I'll give you rest." He says, "Learn from me, for I'm gentle and humble in heart, and in me you will find rest for your souls." And so what Jesus offers is himself to walk with you in life, to orient you to a different way to think about life, to guide you on a different path, a different way to do life. It's a way in which the weariness ends, but worth abounds. It's a way in which the striving ends, but security abounds. It's a way in which perfectionism ends, but purpose abounds. It's the way of Jesus, where anxiety and fear and fretfulness are laid down, and hope and peace and rest are yours in abundance. He tamed the untamable, and his heart is for you. And he says, "Come. Come, because Jesus is enough." Now I'm going to take this further next week and look at something deeper that lays behind our failure to thrive despite our striving. And we're going to look at what Jesus has done about that as well. But for now, in the face of devastating loss, when Nicola McDermott said peace is found in a person, she was pointing at this reality. That Jesus invites you to come to him. That Jesus invites you to believe in who he claims to be. That Jesus invites you to lay aside your striving and to rest in what he has for you, both now and for eternity. So what do people gain from all their labours at which they toil under the sun? Moments of joy, but then moments of frustration, and then death. But what do people gain when they come to Jesus? Enough. Enough.